I knew how grief could make you behave in ways you couldn't even begin to understand. I love your railway carriage, I said. And your invisible house. Then I hope you'll come again, he said. The compulsive shagger. If this was how he picked up women, I thought a little wistfully, then boy, he was good. It was a potent mix. The gentlemanly grieving father, the rare smiles, the way he could scoop up a hen one-handed, and the hen actually looked happy about it. I would not allow myself to become one of the psycho girlfriends, I told myself repeatedly. But there was a sneaking pleasure to be had in just flirting gently with a handsome man. It was nice to feel something other than anxiety or mute fury, the twin emotions that seemed to make up so much of my daily life. The only other encounters I've had with the opposite sex over the last several months have been fueled by alcohol and ended with a taxi and tears of self-loathing in the shower. What do you think, Will? Is this okay? It had grown darker and we watched as the chickens clucked their way indignantly into their coop. Sam watched them. He leant back in his chair. I get the feeling, Louisa Clark, that when you're talking to me, there's a whole conversation going on somewhere else. I wanted to come back with a smart answer, but he was right, and there was nothing I could say. You and I, we're both skirting around something. You're very direct. And now I've made you uncomfortable. No, I glanced at him. Well, maybe a little. Behind us, a crow lifted noisily into the sky, its flapping wings sending vibrations through the still air. I fought the urge to smooth my hair and instead took a last twig of my beer. Okay, well, here's a real question. How long do you think it takes to get over someone dying? Someone you really loved, I mean. I'm not sure why I asked him. I was almost cruelly blunt given his circumstances. Perhaps I was afraid that the compulsive shagger was about to come out to play. Sam's eyes widened a little. Whoa. Well, he peered down at his mug and then out of the shadowy fields. I'm not sure you ever do. That's cheery. No, really, I've thought about it a lot. You learn to live with it, with them, because they do stay with you even if they're not living, breathing people anymore. It's not the same crushing grief you felt at first, the kind that swamps you and makes you want to cry in the wrong places and get irrationally angry with all the idiots who are still alive when the person you love is dead. It's just something you learn to accommodate. Like adapting around a hole. I don't know, it's like you become a donut instead of a bun. There was such sadness in his face that I felt suddenly guilty. A donut? Stupid analogy, he said with a half smile. No, I didn't mean to. He shook his head. He looked at the grass between his feet, then sideways at me. Come on, let's get you home. We walked across the field to his bike. The air had cooled and I crossed my arms over my chest. He saw and handed me his jacket, insisting when I said I was okay. It was pleasingly heavy and potently male. I tried not to inhale. Do you pick up all your patients like this? Only the live ones. I laughed, and it came out of me unexpectedly louder than I had intended. We're not really meant to ask patients out on dates. He held out the spare helmet. But I figure you're not my patient anymore. I took it. And this isn't really a date. Isn't it? He gave a small philosophical nod as I climbed aboard. Okay. Chapter 11. That week, when I arrived at the Moving On Circle, Jake wasn't there. As Daphne discussed her inability to open jars without a man in her kitchen, and Sunil talked of the problems of dividing up his brother's few belongings among his remaining siblings, I found myself waiting for the heavy red doors to open at the end of the church hall. I told myself it was his welfare I was concerned about, that he needed to be able to express his discomfort at his father's behaviour in a safe place. I told myself that it was not Sam I was hoping to see, leaning against his bike. What are the small things that trip you up, Louisa? Perhaps Jake had finished with the group, I thought. Perhaps he had decided he didn't need it any more. People did drop out, everyone said, and that would be it. I would never see either of them again. Louisa, the daily things, there must be something. I kept thinking about that field, the neat confines of the railway carriage, the way Sam had strolled down the field with a hen under one arm as if he was carrying a precious parcel. The feathers on her chest had been as soft as a whisper. Daphne nudged me. We're discussing the small things in day-to-day life that force you to contemplate loss, said Mark. I miss sex, said Natasha.
That's not a small thing, replied William. You didn't know my husband, said Natasha and snorted a laugh.
Oh, not really. Oh, that's a terrible joke to make. I'm sorry. I don't know what came over me.
It's a good joke, said Mark encouragingly.
Olaf was perfectly well endowed, very well endowed, in fact. Natasha's eyes flickered around us. When nobody spoke, she held up her hands a foot apart and nodded emphatically.
We were very happy.
There was a short silence.
Good, said Mark. That's nice to hear.
I don't want anyone thinking... I mean, that's not what I want people thinking when they think of my husband, that he had a tiny...
I'm sure nobody thinks that about your husband.
I will if you keep going on about it, said William.
I don't want you thinking about my husband's penis, said Natasha. In fact, I forbid you to think about my husband's penis.
Well, stop going on about it then, said William.
Can we not talk about penises, said Daphne. It makes me go a bit peculiar.
The nuns used to smack us with rulers if we even used the word undercarriage.
Mark's voice was now tinged with desperation. Can we steer the conversation away from... back to symbols of loss?
Louisa, you were about to tell us which small things brought your loss home to you.
I sat there, trying to ignore Natasha holding up her hands again, silently measuring some unlikely invisible length.
I think I miss having someone to discuss things with, I said carefully. There was a murmur of agreement.
I mean, I'm not one of those people who has a massive circle of friends. I was with my last boyfriend for ages and we didn't really go out much. And then there was Bill.
We just used to talk all the time about music and people and things we'd done and wanted to do. And I never worried about whether I was going to say the wrong thing or offend someone because he just got me, you know?
And now I've moved to London and I'm sort of on my own, apart from my family, and talking to them is always tricky.
Word, said Sunil.
And now there's something going on that I'd really like to chat to him about. I talk to him in my head, but it isn't the same. I miss having that ability to just go, hey, what do you think of this? And knowing that whatever he said was probably going to be the right thing.
The group was silent for a minute.
You can talk to us, Louisa, said Mark.
It's complicated. It's always complicated, said Leanne.
I looked at their faces, kind and expectant, and completely unlikely to understand anything I told them. Not really understand it.
Daphne adjusted her silk scarf.
What Louisa needs is another young man to talk to. Of course she does. You're young and pretty, you'll find someone else, she said. And you, Natasha, get back out there. It's too late for me, but you two shouldn't be sitting here in this dingy old hall. Sorry, Mark, but they shouldn't. You should be out dancing and having a laugh.
Natasha and I exchanged a look. Clearly she wanted to go out dancing about as much as I did. I had a sudden memory of Ambulance Sam and pushed the thought away.
And if you ever do want another penis, William said, I'm sure I could pencil you in a...
Okay, everyone. Let's move on to Will's, said Mark. Anyone surprised by what turned up?
I got home exhausted at 9:15. To find Lily lying on the sofa in front of the television in her pyjamas. I dropped my bag.
How long have you been here?
Since breakfast.
Are you okay?
Her face held a pallor that spoke of either illness or exhaustion. Not feeling well. She was eating popcorn out of a bowl and lazily scooped her fingers around the bottom of the bowl for crumbs. I just didn't feel like doing anything today.
Lily's phone beeped. She stared listlessly at the message that came through, then pushed it away under a sofa cushion.
Everything really okay? I asked after a minute.
Fine.
She didn't look fine.
Anything I can help with?
I said I was fine.
She didn't look at me as she spoke.
Lily spent that night at the flat. The following day, as I was leaving for work, Mr. Trainer rang and asked to speak to her. She was stretched across the sofa and looked blankly up at me when I told her who was on the phone. Then finally, reluctantly, held out a hand for the receiver. I stood there as she listened to him. I couldn't hear his words, but I could hear his tone. Kind, reassuring, emollient. When he finished, she left a short pause, then said, Okay, fine. Are you going to see him again? I said as she handed back the phone. He wants to come to London to see me. Well, that's nice. But he can't be too far away from her, just in case she goes into labour. Do you want me to take you back there to see him? No. She tucked her knees underneath her chin, reached out the remote control and flicked through the channels. Do you want to talk about it? I said after a minute. She didn't respond, and after a minute or two I realised the conversation was over. On Thursday I went into my bedroom, closed the door and called my sister. We were speaking several times a week. It was easier now that my estrangement from my parents no longer hung between us like a conversational minefield. Do you think it's normal? Dad told me once I didn't speak to him for 2 whole weeks when I was 16. Only grunts. And I was actually quite happy. Well, she's not even grunting. She just looks miserable. All teenagers do. It's their default setting. It's the cheerful ones you have to worry about. They're probably hiding some massive eating disorder or stealing lipsticks from Boots. She spent the last 3 days just lying on the sofa. And your point is? I think something's wrong. She's 16 years old. Her dad never knew she existed and popped his clogs before she could meet him. Her mother married someone she calls a fuckface. And she has 2 little brothers who sound like trainee Reggie and Ronnie Cray. And they changed the locks to her family home. I would probably lie on the sofa for a year if I was her. Trina took a noisy slurp of her tea. Plus, she's living with someone who wears glittery green spandex to a bar job and calls it a career. Lurex. It's Lurex. Whatever. So when are you going to find yourself a decent job? Soon. I just need to get this situation sorted first. This situation? She's really down. I feel bad for her. You know what makes me feel down? The way you keep promising to live some kind of a life, then sacrifice yourself to every waif and stray who comes across your path. Will was not a waif and stray, but Lily is. You don't even know this girl, Lou. You should be focusing on moving forward. You should be sending off your CV, talking to contacts, working out where your strengths are, not finding yet another excuse to put your own life on hold. I stared outside at the city sky. In the next room I could hear the television burbling away, then Lily getting up and walking to the fridge and flopping down again. I lowered my voice. So what would you do, Treen? The child of the man you love turns up on your doorstep, and everyone else seems to have pretty much handed over responsibility for her. What, you'd walk away too, would you? My sister fell briefly silent. This was a rare occurrence, and I felt obliged to keep talking. So if Tom, in 8 years' time, had fallen out with you for whatever reason, say he was pretty much on his own and he was going off the rails, what, you'd think it was great if the one person he asked for help decided it was altogether too much of a pain in the arse, would you? That they should just bugger off and suit themselves? I rested my head against the wall. I'm trying to do the right thing here, Treen. Just cut me a break, okay? Nothing. It makes me feel better, okay? It makes me feel better knowing I'm helping. My sister was silent for so long I wondered whether she'd hung up. Treen? Okay. Well, I do remember reading a thing in social psychology about how teenagers find too much face-to-face contact exhausting. What, do you want me to talk to her through a door? One day I would have a telephone conversation with my sister that didn't involve the weary sigh of someone explaining something to a half-wit. No, doofus. What it means is that if you're going to get her to talk to you, you need to be doing something together, side by side. On my way home on Friday evening, I stopped off at the DIY superstore. Back at my block, I lugged the bags up the 4 flights of stairs and let myself in. Lily was exactly where I was expecting to find her, stretched out in front of the television. What's that? She asked. Paint. This flat is a bit tired. You keep telling me I need to brighten it up. I thought we could get rid of this boring old magnolia. She couldn't help herself. I pretended to be busy making myself a drink, watching out of the corner of my eye as she stretched and then walked over and examined the paint cans. Well, that's hardly any less boring. It's basically pale grey. I was told grey was the in thing. I'll take it back if you think it won't work. She peered at it. No, it's okay. I thought the spare room could have cream on 2, then 1 grey wall. Do you think they go? I busied myself with unwrapping the paintbrushes and rollers as I spoke. I changed into an old shirt and some shorts and asked if she could put on some music. What sort? You choose. I hauled a chair off to one side and laid some dust sheets along the wall. Your dad said I was a musical philistine. She didn't say anything, but I had her attention. I cracked open a paint tin and began to mix it. He made me go to my first ever concert. Classical, not pop. I only agreed because it meant he would leave the house. He didn't like going out much in the early days. He put on a shirt and a good jacket, and it was the first time I had seen him look like... I remembered the jolt as I had seen, emerging from the stiff blue collar the man he had been before his accident. I swallowed. Anyway, I went preparing to be bored, and I cried my way through the second half like a complete loon. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever heard in my life. A short silence.
What was it? What did you listen to?
Oh, I can't remember. Sibelius? Does that sound right? She shrugged. I started painting as she came up beside me. She picked up a brush. She said nothing at first, but she seemed to lose herself in the repetitive nature of the task. She was careful too, adjusting the sheet so that she didn't spill paint on the floor, wiping her brush on the edge of the pot. We didn't speak, except for muttered requests. Can you pass me the smaller brush? Do you think that will show through on the second coat? It took us half an hour to do the first wall between us.
So what do you think? I said, admiring it.
Think we could do another? She moved a dust sheet and started on the next wall. She had put on some indie band I had never heard of. Light-hearted and agreeable. I started to paint again, ignoring the ache in my shoulder, the urge to yawn.
You should get some pictures.
You're right. I've got this big print at home of a Kandinsky. It doesn't really go in my room. You could have it here if you want. That'd be great. She was working faster now, speeding across the wall, carefully cutting in around the large window. So I was thinking, I said, we should speak to Will's mum, your grandmother. Are you okay if I write to her? She said nothing. She crouched down, apparently absorbed in carefully coating the wall to the skirting board. Finally, she stood up.
Is she like him?
Like who?
Mrs. Traynor.
Is she like Mr. Traynor? I stepped down from the box I was standing on and wiped my brush on the edge of the tin.
She's different.
That's your way of saying she's a cow.
She's not a cow. She's just... It takes longer to get to know her is all.
That's your way of telling me she's a cow and she's not going to like me.
I'm not saying that at all, Lily. But she is someone who doesn't show her emotions easily.
Lily sighed and put down her paintbrush.
I'm basically the only person in the world who could discover two grandparents I didn't know I had, then find out that neither of them even likes me.
We stared at each other, and suddenly, unexpectedly, we started to laugh. I put the lid on the paint.
Come on, I said, let's go out.
Where?
You're the one who says I need to have some fun. You tell me.
I pulled out a series of tops from one of my storage boxes until Lily finally determined which one was acceptable, and I let her take me to a tiny cavernous club in a back street near the West End, where the bouncers knew her by name, and nobody seemed to consider for a minute that she might be under 18.
It's 90s music, olden days stuff, she said cheerfully.
And I tried not to think too hard about the fact that I was, in her eyes, basically geriatric. We danced until I stopped feeling self-conscious. Sweat came through our clothes, our hair stuck out in fronds, and my hip hurt so much that I wondered whether I would be able to stand up behind the bar the following week. We danced as if we had nothing to do but dance.
Lord, it felt good.
I had forgotten the joy of just existing, of losing yourself in music, in a crowd of people, the sensations that came with becoming one communal, organic mass, alive only to a pulsing beat. For a few dark, thumping hours, I let go of everything. My problems floating away like helium balloons. My awful job, my picky boss, my failure to move on. I became a thing, alive, joyful. I looked over the crowd at Lily, her eyes closed as her hair flew about her face. That peculiar mixture of concentration and freedom in her features that comes when someone loses themselves in rhythm. Then she opened her eyes. And I wanted to be angry that her raised arm held a bottle that clearly wasn't cola. But I found myself smiling back at her, a broad, euphoric grin, and thinking how strange it was that a messed up child who barely knew herself had so much to teach me about the business of living. Around us, London was shrill and heaving, even though it was 2 a.m. We paused for Lily to take joint selfies of us in front of a theatre, a Chinese sign and a man dressed as a large bear. Apparently every event had to be marked by photographic evidence. Then wove our way through crowded streets in search of a night bus, past the late-night kebab shops and the bellowing drunks, the pimps and the gaggles of screeching girls. My hip was throbbing badly, and sweat was cooling unpleasantly under my damp clothes. But I still felt energized, as if I had been snapped back on. "God knows how we're going to get home," Lily said cheerfully. And then I heard the shout. "Lou!" There was Sam, leaning out of the driver's window of an ambulance. As I lifted my hand in response, he pulled the truck across the road in a giant U-turn. "Where are you headed?" "Home, if we can ever find a bus." "Hop in. Go on, I won't tell if you won't. We're just finishing our shift." He looked at the woman beside him. "Oh, come on, Don. She's a patient. Broken hip. Can't leave her to walk home." Lily was delighted by this unexpected turn of events. And then the rear door opened and the woman, in a paramedic uniform, eyes rolling, was shepherding us in. "You're going to get us sacked, Sam," she said, and motioned for us to sit down on the gurney. "Hiya, I'm Donna." "Oh, no, I do remember you. The one who..." "Fell off a building." "Yep." Lily pulled me to her for an ambulance selfie, and I tried not to look as Donna rolled her eyes again. "So where have you been?" Sam called through to the rear. "Dancing," said Lily. "I've been trying to persuade Louisa to be less of a boring old fart. Can we put the siren on?" "No. Where'd you go?" "That's from another boring old fart, by the way. I won't have a clue, whatever you say." "The 22, said Lily. "Down the back of Tottenham Court Road?" "That's where we had the emergency tracheotomy, Sam. I remember. You look like you've had a good night." He met my eye in the mirror and I coloured a little. I was suddenly glad to have been out dancing. It made me seem like I might be someone else altogether. Not just a tragic airport barmaid whose idea of a night out was falling off a roof. "It was great," I said, beaming. Then he looked down at the computer screen on the dashboard. "Oh, great. We've got a green one over at Spencer's."
"But we're headed back in," said Donna. "Why does Lenny always do this to us? The man's a sadist."
"No one else available."
"What's going on?"
"The job's come up. I might have to drop you. It's not far from yours, though, okay?"
"Spencer's," said Donna, and let out a deep sigh. "Oh, marvellous. Hold on tight, girls." The siren went on and we were off, lurching through the London traffic with the blue light screaming above our head, Lily squealing with delight. On any given weeknight, Donna told us as we clutched the handrails, the station would get calls from Spencer's, summoned to fix those who hadn't made it upright to closing time, or to stitch up the faces of young men for whom 6 pints in an evening left them combative, without any accompanying sense.
"These youngsters should be feeling great about life, but instead they're just knocking themselves out with every spare pound they earn. Every bloody week!"
We were there in minutes, the ambulance slowing outside to avoid the drunks spilling out onto the pavement. The signs in Spencer's nightclub's smoked windows advertised, "Free drinks for girls before 10 p.m. Despite the stag and hen night, the catcalling and gaudy clothes, the packed streets of the drinking zone had less of a carnival atmosphere than something tense and explosive. I found myself gazing out of the window warily. Sam opened the rear doors and picked up his bag. "Stay in the rig," he said, and climbed out. A police officer headed over to him, muttered something, and we watched as they walked over to a young man who was sitting in the gutter, blood streaming from a wound to his temple. Sam squatted beside him, while the officer attempted to keep back the drunken gawkers, the helpful friends, the wailing girlfriends. He seemed to be surrounded by a bunch of well-dressed extras from The Walking Dead, swaying mindlessly and grunting, occasionally bloodied and toppling. "Oh, I hate these jobs," said Donna, checking briskly through her pack of plastic-wrapped medical supplies as we watched.
"Give me a woman in labour, or a nice old granny with cardiomyopathy any day. Oh, flippin' heck, he's off."
Sam was tilting the young lad's head to examine it when another boy, his hair thick with gel and the collar of his shirt soaked in blood, grabbed at his shoulder.
"Oi! I need to go in the ambulance!"
Sam turned slowly towards the young drunk, who was spraying blood and saliva as he spoke.
"Back away now, mate. All right. Just let me do my job."
Drink had made the boy stupid. He glanced at his mates and then he was in Sam's face again, snarling,
"Don't you tell me to back away!"
Sam ignored him and continued attending to the other boy's face.
"Hey! Hey, you! I need to get to the hospital!"
He pushed Sam's shoulder.
"Hey!"
Sam stayed crouched for a moment, very still. Then he straightened slowly and turned so that he was nose to nose with the drunk. "I'll explain something in terms you might be able to understand, son. You're not getting in the truck, okay? That's it. Save your energy, go finish your night with your mates, put a bit of ice on it and see your GP in the morning.
You don't get to tell me nothing. I pay your wages. My effing nose is broke.
As Sam gazed steadily back at him, the boy swung out a hand and pushed at Sam's chest. Sam looked down at it.
Uh-oh, said Donna beside me.
Sam's voice, when it emerged, was a growl.
Okay, I'm warning you now.
You don't warn me!
The boy's face was scornful.
You don't warn me! Who do you think you are?
Donna was out of the truck and jogging towards a cop. She murmured something in his ear and I saw them both look over. Donna's face was pleading. The boy was still yelling and swearing, now pushing at Sam's chest.
So you sort me out before you deal with that wanker!
Sam adjusted his collar. His face had become dangerously still. And just as I realised I was holding my breath, the policeman was there between them. Donna's hand was on Sam's sleeve and she was steering him back to the young lad on the curb. The policeman muttered something into his radio, his hand on the drunk's shoulder. The boy swung round and spat on Sam's jacket.
Fuck you!
There was a brief, shocked silence. Sam stiffened.
Sam, come on, give me a hand, yeah? I need you!
Donna propelled him forwards. When I caught sight of Sam's face, his eyes glittered as cold and hard as diamonds.
Come on, said Donna, as they loaded the semi-comatose lad into the back of the truck. Let's get out of here.
He drove silently. Lily and I wedged into the front seat beside him. Donna cleared the back of his jacket and he stared ahead, stubbly jaw jutting.
Could be worse, Donna said cheerfully. I had one throw up in my hair last month, and the little monster did it on purpose. Shoved his fingers down the back of his throat and ran up beside me just because I wouldn't take him home. Like I was some kind of bloody minicab.
She stood up and motioned for the energy drink she kept in the front. It's a waste of resources. When you think what we could be doing, instead of scooping up a load of little... She took a swig, then looked down at the barely conscious young boy.
I don't know. You have to wonder what goes on in their heads.
Not much, said Sam.
Yeah, well, we have to keep this one on a tight leash, Donna patted Sam's shoulder. He got a caution last year.
Sam glanced sideways at me, suddenly sheepish.
We went to pick up a girl from the top of Commercial Street. Face smashed to a pulp. Domestic. As I went to lift her onto the gurney, her boyfriend came flying out of the pub and went for her again. I couldn't help myself.
But you took a swing at him.
More than one, Donna scoffed. Yeah, well, it wasn't a good time.
Donna shifted to grimace at me. Well, this one can't afford to get in trouble again or he's out of the service. Thanks, I said, as he let us out. For the lift, I mean.
I couldn't leave you in that open-air asylum, he said.
His eyes briefly met mine. Then Donna shut the door and they were gone, heading for the hospital with their battered human cargo.
You totally fancy him,
said Lily, as we watched the ambulance disappear. I'd forgotten she was even there. I sighed as I reached into my pockets for the keys.
He's a shagger.
So? I would totally shag that, Lily said as I opened the door to let her in. I mean, if I was old and a bit desperate, like you.
I don't think I'm ready for a relationship, Lily. She was walking behind me, so there was no way I could actually prove it, but I swear I could feel her pulling faces at me the whole way up the stairs. Chapter 12. I wrote to Mrs. Traynor. I didn't tell her about Lily, just that I hoped she was well, that I was back from my travels and would be in her area in a few weeks with a friend and would like to say hello, if possible. I sent it first class and felt oddly excited as it plopped into the postbox. Dad had told me over the phone that she had left Granter House within weeks of Will's death. He said the estate workers had been shocked, but I thought back to the time I had spotted Mr. Traynor out with Della, the woman he was now about to have a baby with. And I wondered how many genuinely had been. There were few secrets in a small town.
She took it all terrible hard, Dad said. And once she was gone, your red-haired woman was in there like Flynn. She saw her chance, all right. Nice old fella. Own hair, big house. He's not going to be single for long, eh? Speaking of which, Lou, you wouldn't have a word with your mother about her armpits, would you? She's going to be after plaiting it if she lets it all grow any longer.
I kept thinking about Mrs. Traynor, trying to imagine how she would react to the news about Lily. I remembered the joy and disbelief on Mr. Traynor's face at their first meeting. Would Lily help to heal her pain a little? Sometimes I watched Lily laughing at something on television or simply gazing steadily out of the window, lost in thought. And I saw Will so clearly in her features. The precise angles of her nose, those almost Slavic cheekbones, that I forgot to breathe. At this point she would usually grumble, "Stop staring at me like a weirdo, Clark. You're freaking me out." Lily had come to stay for 2 weeks. Tanya Horton Miller had called to say they were off on a family holiday to Tuscany, and Lily didn't want to go with them.
"Frankly, the way she's behaving right now, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine. She's exhausting me."
I pointed out that given Lily was barely at home and Tanya had chained the locks to her front door, it would be pretty hard for Lily to exhaust anyone, unless she was tapping at their window and singing a lament. There was a short silence. "When you have your own children, Louisa, you might eventually have some idea what I'm talking about. Oh, the trump card of all parents. How could I possibly understand?" She offered me money to cover Lily's board and lodgings while they were away. I took some pleasure in telling her that I wouldn't dream of taking it, even though, frankly, it was costing me more than I had anticipated to have her there. Lily, it turned out, wasn't satisfied with my beans on toast or cheese sandwich suppers. She would ask for cash, then return with artisan bread, exotic fruit, Greek yogurt, organic chicken, the staples of a wealthy middle-class kitchen. I remembered Tanya's house, the way Lily had stood by the oversized fridge and thoughtlessly dropped chunks of fresh pineapple into her mouth. "By the way," I said, "who is Martin?" There was a short pause.
"Martin is my former partner. Lily apparently insists on seeing him, even though she knows I don't like it."
"Could I have his number? I'd just like to make sure I know where she is, you know, while you're gone."
"Martin's number? Why would I have Martin's number?" she squawked.
And the phone went dead. Something had changed since I'd met Lily. It wasn't just that I'd learned to accommodate the explosion of teenage-related mess in my near-empty flat. I'd actually started to quite enjoy having Lily in my life. Having someone to eat with, sit side by side with on the sofa, commenting on whatever we happened to be watching on the television. Or keeping a poker face when she offered me some concoction she'd made.
"Well, how should I know you have to cook the potatoes in a potato salad? It's a salad, for God's sake."
At work, I now listened to the fathers at the bar wishing their children good night as they flew off on business trips.
"You'd be good for Mummy now, Luke." "Did you? You did? Aren't you a clever boy?"
And the custody arguments conducted in hissed telephone conversations. "No, I did not say I could pick him up from school that day. I was always due in Barcelona." "Yes, I was." "No, no, you just don't listen." I couldn't believe that you could give birth to someone, love them, nurture them, and by their 16th year claim that you were so exasperated that you changed the locks of your house against them. 16 was still a child, surely. For all her posturing, I could see the child in Lily. It was there in the excitements and the sudden enthusiasms. It was there in the sulks, the trying on of different looks in front of my bathroom mirror, and the abrupt, innocent sleep. I thought of my sister and her uncomplicated love for Tom. I thought of my parents encouraging, worrying about, and supporting Trina and me, even though we were both well into adulthood. And in those moments, I felt Will's absence in Lily's life like I felt it in my own. "You should have been here, Will," I told him silently. "It was you she really needed."
I booked a day's holiday. An outrage, according to Richard. "Well, you've only been back 5 weeks, so I really don't see why you need to disappear again."
I smiled, bobbed a curtsy in the grateful Irish dancing girl manner, and drove home later to find Lily painting one of the spare room walls a particularly vivid shade of jade green.
"Oh, you said you wanted to brighten it up," she said, as I stood with my mouth open.
"Don't worry, I paid for the paint myself." "Well," I pulled off my wig and unlaced my shoes. "Just make sure you finish by this evening, because I've got the day off tomorrow," I said when I changed into my jeans. "And I'm going to show you some of the things your dad liked." She stopped, dripping jade paint onto the carpet.
"What things?"
"You'll see." We spent the day driving, our soundtrack a playlist on Lily's iPod that provided 1 minute a heartbreaking dirge of love and loss, the next an ear-perforating, raging anthem of hatred against all mankind. I mastered the art, while on the motorway, of mentally rising above the noise and focusing on the road, while Lily sat beside me, nodding in time to the beat and occasionally performing an impromptu John roll on the dashboard. It was good, I thought, that she was enjoying herself.
And who needed both eardrums to be working anyway?
We started off in Stortfold and took in the places Will and I used to sit and eat, the picnic spots in the field above the town, his favourite benches around the grounds of the castle, and Lily had the grace to try to not look bored. To be fair, it was quite hard to work up enthusiasm about a series of fields. So I sat down and told her how, when I had first met him, Will had barely left the house, and how, through a mixture of subterfuge and bloody-mindedness, I had set about getting him out again. "You have to understand," I said, "that your father hated to be dependent on anyone. And us going out didn't just mean that he had to rely on someone else, but he had to be seen to be relying on someone else. Even if it was you. Even if it was me." She was thoughtful for a moment. "I'd hate people seeing me like that. I don't even like people seeing me with wet hair." We visited the gallery where he had tried to explain to me the difference between good and bad modern art. I still couldn't tell. And she pulled a face at almost everything on its walls. We poked our heads into the wine merchants where he had made me taste different sorts of wine. "No, Lily, we are not doing a wine tasting today." And then walked to the tattoo shop where he had persuaded me to get my tattoo. She asked if I could lend her the money for one. I nearly worked with relief when the man told her no under-18s. Then asked to see my little bumblebee. That was one of the few occasions when I felt I'd actually impressed her. She laughed out loud when I told her what he had chosen for himself. A best-before date stenciled on his chest. "You have the same awful sense of humour," I said, and she tried not to look pleased. It was then that the owner, overhearing our conversation, mentioned that he had a photograph. "I keep pictures of all my tattoos," he said, from under a heavily waxed handlebar moustache. "I like to have a record. Just remind me of the date." We stood there silently as he flicked through his laminated binder, and there it was. From almost 2 years previously, a close-up of that black-and-white design, neatly inked onto Will's caramel skin. I stood and stared at the photograph, its familiarity taking my breath away. The little black-and-white patterned block, the one I had washed with a soft cloth which I had dried, rubbed sun cream into, rested my face against. I would have reached out to touch it, but Lily got there first, her fingers with their bitten nails tracing gently over the image of her father's skin. "I think I'll get one," she said. "Like his, I mean, when I'm old enough." "So how is he?" Lily and I turned. The tattooist was sitting on his chair, rubbing at a heavily coloured forearm. "I remember him. We don't get many quadriplegics in here," he grinned. "He's a bit of a character, isn't he?" A lump rose suddenly to my throat. "He's dead," said Lily baldly. "My dad, he's dead." The tattooist winced. "Sorry, sweetheart, I had no idea." "Can I keep this?" Lily had started to work the photograph of Will's tattoo out of its plastic binder. "Sure," he said hurriedly. "If you want it, take it. Here, have the plastic cover as well, in case it rains." "Thank you," she said, tucking it neatly under her arm, and as the man stuttered another apology, we walked out of the shop. We had lunch, an all-day breakfast, silently in a cafe. Feeling the day's mood leech away from us, I began to talk. I told Lily what I knew of Will's romantic history, about his career, that he was the kind of man who made you long for his approval, whether just by doing something that impressed him or making him laugh with some stupid joke. I told her how he was when I met him, and how he had changed, softened, starting to find joy in small things, even if many of those small things seemed to involve making fun of me. Like I wasn't very adventurous when it came to food. My mum basically has 10 set meals which she's rotated for the past 25 years, and none of them involves quinoa or lemongrass or guacamole. Your dad would eat anything. And now you do too. Actually, I still try guacamole every couple of months or so. Well, for him, really. You don't like it? It tastes okay, I suppose. I just can't get past the fact that it looks like something you blow out of your nose. I told her about his previous girlfriend and how we had gatecrashed her wedding dance, me sitting on Will's lap as he turned his motorized wheelchair in circles on the dance floor, and she had snorted her drink through her nose. Seriously? Her wedding? In the overheated confines of the little cafe, I conjured her father for her as best I could, and perhaps it was because we were away from all the complications of home, or because her parents were in a different country, or because, just for once, someone was telling her stories about him that were uncomplicated and funny. She laughed, and ask questions, nodding often as if my answers had confirmed something that she already believed. Yes, yes, he was like this. Yes, maybe I'm like that too. And as we talked well into the afternoon, letting our cups of tea cool in front of us, and the weary waitress offered yet again to remove the last of the toast we had taken 2 hours to eat, I grasped something else. For the first time, I was recalling Will without sadness. What about you? What about me? I put the last crust into my mouth, eyeing the waitress, who looked as if this was her trigger to come back again. What happened to you after Dad died? I mean, you seem to have done a lot more stuff when you were with him, even with him being stuck in a wheelchair than you do now. The bread had turned claggy in my mouth. I struggled to swallow. Eventually, when the mouthful had gone down, I said, I do things. I've been busy, working. I mean, when you're on shift, it's hard to make plans. She raised her eyebrows a fraction, but she didn't say anything. And my hip is still quite painful. I'm not really up to mountain climbing yet. Lily stirred her tea idly. My life is eventful. I mean, falling off a roof isn't exactly humdrum, and there's quite a lot of excitement for 1 year. But it's hardly doing something, is it? We were silent for a moment. I took a breath, trying to quell the sudden buzzing in my ears. The waitress arriving between us swept up our empty plates with a faint air of triumph and took them to the kitchen. Hey, I said, did I tell you about the time I took your dad to the races? With immaculate timing, my car overheated on the motorway 40 miles from London. Lily was surprisingly sanguine about it. In fact, she was curious. I've never been in a car that broke down. I didn't know they even did that anymore. At this statement, my jaw dropped. My dad would regularly pray loudly to his old van, promising premium petrol and regular tyre pressure checks, endless love if she would make it back home again. Then she told me her parents traded up their Mercedes every year, mostly, she added, because of the level of damage done to the leather interior by her half-brothers. We sat by the side of the motorway waiting for the breakdown truck to arrive and feeling the little car judder sporadically as the lorries rumbled past. Eventually deciding it would be safer for us to be out of the car, we scrambled up the embankment at the side of the motorway and sat on the grass, watching as the afternoon sun lost its heat and slid down the other side of the motorway bridge. So who is Martin? I said when we had exhausted all breakdown-related conversation. Lily plucked at the grass beside her. Martin Steele? He's the man I grew up with. I thought that was Francis. No. Fuckface only came into the picture when I was 7. You know, Lily, you might want to stop calling him that. She gave me a sideways look. Okay, you're probably right. She lay back on the grass and smiled sweetly. I'll call him Penis Features instead. Let's stick with Fuckface then. So how come you still visit him? Martin? Well, he's the only dad I really remember. Mum got together with him while I was small. He's a musician. He's very creative. He used to read stories and stuff and make up songs about me. That kind of thing. I just... She trailed off. What happened between him and your mum? Lily reached into her bag, pulled out a packet of cigarettes and lit one. She inhaled and let out a long flute of smoke, almost dislocating her jawbone in the process. I came home from school one day with the au pair and Mum just announced that he'd gone. She said they'd agreed that he'd had to go because they weren't getting on anymore. She inhaled again. Apparently he wasn't interested in her personal growth or he didn't share her vision of the future, some bullshit. I think she just met Francis and knew Martin was never going to give her what she wanted. Which was? Money, in a big house, and the chance to spend all her days shopping and bitching to her friends and aligning her chakras or whatever. Francis earns a fortune doing private bank things, in his private bank with all the other private bankers. She turned to me. So, basically, one day Martin was my dad. I mean, I called him Daddy right up until the day he left, and the next he wasn't. He used to take me to nursery and primary school and everything. And then she decides she's had enough of him, and I get home and he's just gone. You know, it's her house, so he's gone, just like that. And I'm not allowed to see him, and I'm not even allowed to talk about him because I'm just dredging things up and being difficult. And obviously she is in so much pain and emotional distress. Here Lily did a scarily good impression of Tanya's voice. And when I really did get mad at her, She told me there was no point in getting so upset because he wasn't even my real dad. So that was a nice way to find out. I stared at her. And the next thing, there's Francis turning up at our door, all over-the-top bunches of flowers and so-called family days out, where I'm basically playing gooseberry and sent off with the nannies while they're all over each other at some child-friendly luxury hotel. And then 6 months later, she takes me to Pizza Express. I think it's some treat for me and that maybe Martin's coming back, but she says she and Francis are getting married and it's wonderful and he's going to be the most wonderful daddy to me and I must love him very much. Lily blew a smoke ring up into the sky, watching as it swelled, wavered and evaporated. And he didn't. I hated him. She looked sideways at me. You can tell, you know, when someone's just putting up with you, even if you're little. He never wanted me, only my mother. I mean, I can sort of understand it. Who wants another man's kid hanging around? So when she had the twins, they sent me away to boarding school. Bang, job done. Her eyes filled with tears and I wanted to reach out to her. But she wrapped her arms around her knees and stared straight ahead. We sat there in silence for a few minutes, watching the traffic start to build below us as the sun slid further down the sky. I found him, you know. I faced her. Martin. When I was 11. I heard my nanny telling another one that she wasn't allowed to tell me that he'd called round. So I told her she had to tell me where he lived or I'd tell my mum she was stealing. I looked up the address and he lived about 15 minutes walk from where we were. Pycroft Road, do you know it? I shook my head. Was he pleased to see you? She hesitated. So happy. He nearly cried, actually. He said he'd missed me so much and it was awful being away from me and that I could come round whenever I wanted. But he had hooked up with someone else and they'd had a baby. And when you turn up at someone's house and they have a baby and like a proper family of their own, you realise you're not part of his family anymore. You're a leftover. I'm sure nobody thought, yeah, well, anyway, he's really lovely and all, but I've told him I can't really see him. You know, it's too weird. And, you know, like I said to him, I'm not your real daughter. He still calls me all the time, though. I mean, it's stupid, really. Lily shook her head furiously. We sat there for a while, and then she looked up at the sky. Do you know the thing that really bugs me? I waited. She changed my name when she got married. My own name. And nobody ever even bothered to ask me. Her voice cracked a little. I didn't even want to be a Horton Miller. Oh, Lily. She wiped briskly at her face with the palm of her hand, as if embarrassed to be seen crying. She inhaled her cigarette, then ground it out on the grass and sniffed noisily. Mind you, these days penis features and mum argue all the time. I wouldn't be surprised if they split up too. If that happens, no doubt we'll all have to move house again and change names and nobody will be able to say anything because of her pain and her need to move forward emotionally or whatever. And in 2 years' time, there will be some other fuckface and my brothers will be Horton Miller Branson or Ozymandias or Toodle Pip or whatever. She half laughed. Luckily, I'll be long gone by then. Not that she'll even notice. You really believe she thinks that little of you? Lily's head swiveled round and the look she gave me was far too wise for her age and utterly heartbreaking. I think she loves me. But she loves herself more. Well, how could she do what she does? Chapter 13. Mr. Trainor's baby was born the following day. The phone rang at 6:30 in the morning and for a brief, awful moment I thought something terrible had happened. But it was Mr. Trainor, breathless and tearful, announcing in a slightly disbelieving exclamatory tones, "It's a girl! 8 pounds, 1 ounce, and she's absolutely perfect!" He told me how beautiful she was, how like Will when he had been a baby, how I simply must come and see her, and then asked me to wake Lily, which I did, and watched her sleepily and silent as he gave her the news that she had they took a minute to work it out. An aunt. Okay, she said finally, and then having listened for a while, yeah, sure. She ended the call and handed the phone back to me. Her eyes met mine. Then she turned to her crumpled T-shirt and went back to bed, closing the door firmly behind her. The well-lubricated health plan salesmen were, I estimated, at 10:45, one round off being barred from their flight, and I was wondering whether to point this out when a familiar reflective jacket appeared at the bar. No one in need of medical assistance here, I walked over to him slowly. Not yet, anyway. I never get tired of that outfit. I have no idea why. Sam climbed up on a stool and rested his elbows on the counter. The wig is, interesting. I tugged at my Lurex skirt. The creation of static electricity is my superpower. Would you like a coffee? Thanks. I can't hang around, though. He checked his radio and put it back in his jacket pocket. I made him an Americano, trying not to look as pleased as I felt to see him. How did you know where I worked? We had a call out at gate 14, suspected heart attack. Jake reminded me you worked at the airport, you know, and you weren't exactly hard to track down. The businessmen were briefly muted. Sam was the kind of man I had noticed, who made other men go a bit quiet. Donna's sneaking a look in duty-free. Handbags. I'm guessing you've seen your patient. He grinned. No, I was going to ask for directions to gate 14 after I'd sat down with a coffee. Funny. So, did you save his life? I gave her some aspirin and advised her that drinking 4 double espressos before 10 a.m. was not the best idea. I'm flattered that you have such an exciting view of my working day. I couldn't help but laugh. I handed him his coffee. He took a grateful swig. So I was wondering, you up for another non-date sometime soon? With or without an ambulance? Definitely without. Can we discuss problem teenagers? I found I was twirling a curly lock of nylon fibre hair with my fingers. For crying out loud, I was playing with my hair and it wasn't even my actual hair. I dropped it. We can discuss whatever you like. What did you have in mind? His pause was long enough to make me blush. Dinner at mine tonight? I promise if it rains I won't make you sit in the dining room. You're on. I'll pick you up at 7:30. He was just gulping down the last of his coffee when Richard appeared. He looked at Sam, then at me. I was still leaning against the bar a few inches from him. Is there a problem? He said. No problem whatsoever, said Sam. When he stood up, he was a whole head taller than Richard. A few fleeting thoughts flickered across Richard's face, so transparent that I could see the progression of each one. Why is this paramedic here? Why is Louisa not doing something? I would like to tell Louisa off for not being obviously busy, but this man is too big and there is a dynamic I do not entirely understand, and I'm a little bit wary of him. It almost made me laugh out loud. So, tonight, Sam nodded at me. Keep the wig on, yes? I like you, flammable. One of the businessmen, florid and pleased with himself, leaned back in his chair so that his stomach strained the seams of his shirt. Are you going to give us the lecture about alcohol limits now? The others laughed. No, no, you go ahead, gentlemen, Sam said, saluting them. I'll just see you in a year or two. I watched him head off to departures, joined by Donna outside the newsagent. When I turned back to the bar, Richard was watching me. I have to say, Louisa, I don't approve of your conducting your social life in a work setting, he said. Fine. Next time I'll tell him to ignore the heart attack at gate 14. Richard's jaw tightened. And what he said just then, about your wearing your wig later on. That wig is the property of Shamrock and Clover Irish Themed Bars, Inc. You are not allowed to wear it in your own time. This time I couldn't help it. I started to laugh. Really? Even he had the grace to flush a little. It's company policy. It's classified as uniform. Damn, I said. I guess I'll just have to buy my own Irish dancing girl wigs in the future. Hey, Richard, I called as he walked back into the office bristling. For fairness, does that mean you can't get jiggy with Mrs. Percival while wearing your polo shirt? I arrived home to find no sign of Lily, other than a cereal packet on the kitchen counter and, inexplicably, a pile of dirt on the floor in the hallway. I tried her phone, got no response, and wondered how you were ever meant to find a balance between over-anxious parent, normally concerned parent, and Tanya Horton Miller. And then I jumped into the shower and got ready for my date that absolutely, definitely wasn't a date. It rained, the heavens opening shortly after we arrived at Sam's field, and we were both soaked even running the short distance from his bike to the railway carriage. I stood dripping as he closed the door behind me, remembering how unpleasant the sensation of wet socks was. Stay there, he said, brushing the drops from his head with a hand. You can't sit around in those wet clothes. This is like the opening to a really bad porn movie, I said. He stood very still and I realised I had actually said the words out loud. I gave him a smile that went a bit wonky. Okay, he said, raising his eyebrows. He disappeared into the back of the carriage and emerged a minute later with a jumper and what looked like some jogging bottoms. Jake's joggers, freshly washed. Possibly not very porn star, though. He handed them to me. My room's back there if you want to get changed, or the bathroom's through that door if you prefer. I walked into his bedroom and closed the door behind me. Above my head, the rain beat noisily on the carriage roof, obscuring the windows with a never-ending stream of water. I wondered about drawing the curtains, then remembered there was nobody to see me other than the hens, which were huddling out of the wet, grumpily shaking drops from their feathers. I pulled off my soap top and jeans and dried myself with the towel he'd placed with the clothes. For fun, I flashed the hens through the window, something I observed afterwards Lily might do. They didn't look impressed. I held the towel to my face and sniffed it guiltily like someone inhaling a forbidden drug. It was freshly laundered, but somehow still managed to smell irrevocably male. I hadn't breathed in a scent like it since Will. It made me feel briefly unbalanced when I put it down. The double bed filled most of the floor space. A narrow cupboard opposite acted as a wardrobe, and two pairs of work boots were neatly stacked in the corner. There was a book on the nightstand, and beside it a photograph of Sam with a smiling woman, whose blonde hair was tied up in a messy knot. She had her arm around his shoulders and was grinning at the camera. She was not supermodel beautiful, but there was something compelling about her smile. She looked like the kind of woman who would have laughed a lot. She looked like a feminine version of Jake. I felt suddenly crushingly sad for him, and had to look away before I made myself sad too. Sometimes I felt as if we were all wading around in grief, reluctant to admit to others how far we were waving or drowning. I wondered fleetingly whether Sam's reluctance to talk about his wife mirrored my own, the knowledge that the moment you opened the box, let out even a whisper of your sadness, it would mushroom into a cloud that overwhelmed all other conversation. I checked myself, took a breath. Just have a nice evening, I murmured, recalling the words of the moving on circle. Allow yourself moments of happiness. I wiped the mascara smudges from under my eyes, observing in the small mirror that little could be done for my hair. Then I pulled Sam's oversized sweater over my head, trying to ignore the weird intimacy that came from wearing a man's clothes, pulled on Jake's joggers, and gazed at my reflection. What do you think, Will? It's just a nice evening. It doesn't have to mean anything, right? Sam grinned as I emerged, rolling up the sleeves of his jumper. You look about 12. I went into the bathroom, wrung out my jeans, shirt and socks in the sink, then hung them over the shower curtain. What's cooking? Well, I was going to do a salad, but it's not really salad weather anymore, so I'm improvising. He had set a pot of boiling water on the stove where it had fogged the windows. You eat pasta, right? I eat anything. Excellent. He opened a bottle of wine and poured me a glass, motioning to the bench seat. In front of me, the little table had been laid for two, and I felt a faint frisson at the sight. It was okay just to enjoy a moment, a small pleasure. I'd been out dancing. I'd flashed some hens. And now I was going to enjoy spending an evening with a man who wanted to cook me dinner. It was all progress, of sorts. Perhaps Sam detected something of this internal struggle, because he waited until I took my first sip, then said, while stirring something on the hob, "Was that the boss you were talking about? That man today?" The wine was delicious. I took another sip. I hadn't dared drink while Lily had been with me. I might have let my guard down. "Yep. Oh, I know the type. If it's any consolation, within 5 years he'll either have a stomach ulcer or enough hypertension to cause erectile dysfunction." I laughed. Both those things are oddly comforting. Finally, he sat down, presenting me with a steaming bowl of pasta. "Cheers," he said, raising a glass of water. "And now, tell me what's going on with this long-lost girl of yours." Oh, but it was such a relief to have someone to talk to. I was so unused to people who actually listened, as opposed to those at the bar who only wanted to hear the sound of their own voice, that talking to Sam was a revelation. He didn't interrupt or tell me what he thought or what I should do. He listened and nodded and topped up my wine and said finally, when it was long dark outside, "It's quite a responsibility you've taken on." I leaned back on the bench and put my feet up. I don't feel like I have a choice. I keep asking myself what you said, What would Will want me to do? I took another sip. It's harder than I'd imagined, though. I thought I'd just drop her in to meet her grandmother and grandfather, and everyone would be delighted and it would be a happy ending, like those reunion programs on television. He studied his hands. I studied him. You think I'm mad getting involved? No. Too many people follow their own happiness without a thought for the damage they leave in their wake. You wouldn't believe the kids I pick up at the weekends, drunk, drugged, off their heads, whatever. The parents are wrapped up in their own stuff or have disappeared completely. So they exist in a vacuum and they make bad choices. Is it worse than it used to be? Who knows? I only know I see all these messed up kids and that the hospital's young person's psych has a waiting list as long as your arm. He smiled wryly. Hold that soapbox. I need to shut the birds up for the night. I wanted to ask him then how someone so apparently wise could be so careless of his own son's feelings. I wanted to ask if he knew how unhappy Jake was, but it seemed a bit too confrontational given the way he was talking and the fact that he had just cooked me a very nice supper. I was distracted by the sight of the hens popping one at a time into their coop, and then he came back, bringing with him the faint scents of outside and the cooler air, and the moment passed. He poured more wine and I drank it. I let myself take pleasure in the snugness of the little railway carriage and the sensation of a properly full belly, and I listened to Sam talk. He told of nights holding the hands of elderly people who didn't want to make a fuss, and of management targets that left them all demoralized, feeling they weren't doing the job they'd been trained for. I listened, losing myself in a world far from my own, watching his hands draw animated circles in the air, his rueful smile when he felt he was taking himself too seriously. I watched his hands. I watched his hands. I coloured slightly as I realised where my thoughts were headed and took another swig of my wine to hide it. Where's Jake tonight?
Barely seen him. His girlfriend, I think.
He looked ruefully. She was this Walton-style family with about a billion brothers and sisters and a mum who's home all day. He likes hanging out there. He took another sip of his water.
So where's Lily?
Dunno. I texted her twice, but she hasn't bothered to reply. The sheer presence of him. It was like he was twice as large and twice as vivid as other men. My thoughts kept drifting, pulled on tides towards his eyes, which narrowed slightly as he listened, as if he were trying to ensure he had understood me perfectly. The faint hint of stubble on his jaw, the shape of his shoulder under the soft wool of his jumper. My gaze kept sliding downwards to his hands, resting on the table, fingers absently tapping on the surface. Such capable hands. I remembered the tenderness with which he had cradled my head, the way I had held on to him in the ambulance as if he were the only thing anchoring me. He looked at me and smiled, a gentle inquiry in it, and something in me turned molten. Would it be so bad, as long as my eyes were open? You want coffee, Louisa? He had this way of looking at me. I shook my head. Do you want... Before I could think about it, I leaned across the little table, reached for the back of his head and kissed him. He hesitated, just for a moment, then shifted forward and kissed me back. At some point, I think someone knocked over a wine glass, but I couldn't stop. I wanted to kiss him forever. I blocked out all thoughts about what this was, about what it might mean, what further mess I might create for myself. Come on, live, I told myself. And I kissed him until reason seeped out through my pores and I became a living pulse, alive only to what I wanted to do to him. He pulled back first, slightly dazed. Louisa, a piece of cutlery clattered to the floor. I stood and he stood and pulled me to him. And suddenly we were crashing around the little railway carriage, all hands and lips and, oh God, the scent and taste and feel of him. It was like tiny fireworks going off all over me, bits of me I thought dead reigniting into life. He picked me up, and I wrapped myself around him, all bulk and strength and muscle. I kissed his face, his ear, my fingers in his soft, dark hair. And then he stood me back down, and we were inches apart, his eyes on me. His expression a silent question. I was breathing hard. I haven't taken my clothes off in front of anyone since... The accident, I said.
It's okay. I'm medically trained.
No, I'm serious. I'm a bit of a mess. I felt suddenly oddly tearful.
You want me to make you feel better?
That's the cheesiest line I've... He lifted his shirt, revealing a 2-inch purple scar across his stomach. There. Stabbed by an Australian with mental health issues 4 years ago. Here. He turned to reveal a huge green and yellow bruise across his lower back. Got a kicking from a drunk last Saturday. A woman. He held out his hand. Broken finger, caught in a gurney while lifting an overweight patient. And oh yes, here. He showed me his hip, along which ran a short, silvery, jagged line with the stitch marks just about visible. Puncture wound. Unknown provenance. Nightclub fight in Hackney Road last year. The cops never worked out who did it. I looked at the solidity of him, at the smattering of scars. What's that one? I said, gently touching a smaller scar on the side of his stomach. His skin was hot under his shirt. That?
Oh, appendix. I was 9.
I gazed at his torso, then his face. Then holding his gaze, I lifted the jumper slowly over his head. I shivered involuntarily, whether from the cooler air or nerves, I couldn't tell. He moved closer, so close that he was inches from me, and ran his finger gently along the line of my hip. I remember this. I remember I could feel the break here. He ran it gently across my bare stomach so that my muscles contracted. And there. You had this bloom of purple on your skin. I was afraid it was organ damage. He placed his palm against it. It was warm and my breath caught. I never thought the words organ damage could sound sexy before. Oh, I haven't started yet. He walked me slowly backwards towards his bed. I sat down, my eyes on his, and he knelt, running his hands down my leg. And then there was that. He picked up my right foot and the vivid red scar across the top. He traced the line of it tenderly with his thumb. There, broken, soft tissue damage. That one would have hurt. You remember a lot. Most people I couldn't recognize in the street a day later, but you. Louisa, well, you kind of stuck. He tipped his head and kissed the top of my foot, then slowly ran his hands up my leg and placed them either side of me so that he was now above me, supporting his own weight. Nothing hurts now, right? I shook my head, mute. I didn't care anymore. I didn't care if he was a compulsive shagger or playing games. I was so overwhelmed with wanting him, I didn't actually care if he broke my other hip. He moved across me inch by inch like a tide, and I lay back so that I was flat on the bed. With each movement, my breath became shallower, until it was all I could hear in the silence. He gazed down at me and closed his eyes and kissed me, slowly and tenderly. He kissed me and let his weight fall onto me just far enough that I felt the delicious powerlessness of lust, the hardness of a body against mine. We kissed, his lips on my neck, his skin against my skin until I was giddy with it, until I was arching involuntarily against him, my legs wrapped around him. Oh, God, I said breathlessly when we came up for air. I wish you weren't so totally wrong for me. The eyebrows shot up.
That's, seductive.
Oh, you're not going to cry afterwards, are you?
He blinked. No.
And just so you know, I'm not some weird obsessive. I'm not going to follow you around afterwards or ask Jake to tell me things about you while you're in the shower.
That's good to know.
And once we had established the ground rules, I flipped over so that I was on top of him and kissed him until I had forgotten everything we had just talked about. An hour and a half later, I was lying on my back and gazing dazedly up at the low ceiling. My skin buzzed. My bones hummed. I ached in places I hadn't known could ache. Yet I was possessed with an extraordinary sense of peace, as if the core of me had simply melted and settled into a new shape. I wasn't sure I would ever get up again. You never know what will happen when you fall from a great height. That surely wasn't me. I coloured as I thought back to even 20 minutes previously. Did I really? And did I? Memories chased themselves in hot circles. I had never had sex like that. Not in 7 years with Patrick. I mean, it was like comparing a cheese sandwich with, what, the most incredible hawk cuisine? An enormous steak? I giggled involuntarily and clamped a hand over my mouth. I felt utterly unlike myself. Sam had dozed off beside me and I turned my head to look at him. Oh my God, I thought, marvelling at the planes of his face, his lips. It was impossible to look at him and not want to touch him. I wondered whether I should move my face a little bit closer in my hand so that I could... Hey, he said softly, his eyes slanted with sleep. And then it hit me. Oh, God. I've become one of them. We dressed in near silence. Sam offered to make me tea, but I said I should probably get back as I needed to check whether Lily was home. Her family being on holiday and all. I tugged my fingers through my now matted hair.
Sure. Oh, you want to go now?
Yes, please. I fetched my clothes from the bathroom, feeling self-conscious and suddenly sober. I couldn't let him see how unbalanced I was. Every bit of me was focused on trying to re-distance myself, and it made me awkward. When I came out, he was dressed and tidying up the last of the supper things. I tried not to look at him. It was easier that way. Could I borrow these clothes to go home? Mine are still damp.
Sure, just whatever.
He rifled in a drawer and held out a plastic bag. I took it and we stood there in the dark space. It was a nice evening.
Nice.
He looked at me as if he were trying to work something out.
Okay.
As we rode through the damp night, I tried not to rest my cheek against his back. He insisted on lending me a leather jacket, although I had insisted I'd be fine. A few miles in, the air was cold and I was glad of it. We made it back to my flat by 11:15, although I had to check when I saw the clock. I felt like I'd lived several lifetimes since he'd picked me up. I dismounted from the bike and started to take off his jacket. He pushed down his kickstand with his heel.
It's late. Let me at least see you upstairs.
I hesitated. Okay, if you wait, I can give you back your clothes. I tried to sound insouciant. He gave a shrug and followed me to the door. We emerged from the stairwell to the sound of music thumping down the hallway. I knew immediately where it was coming from. I limped briskly down the corridor, paused outside the flat and opened the door slowly. Lily stood in the middle of the hall, cigarette in one hand, a glass of wine in the other. She was wearing a yellow flowered dress I had bought from a vintage boutique back in the days when I cared about what I wore. I stared, and it's possible that when I registered what else she was wearing, I stumbled. I felt Sam reach for my arm.
Nice leathers, Louisa.
Lily pointed her toe. She was wearing my green glittery shoes.
Why don't you wear these? You have all these crazy outfits, yet you just wear, like, jeans and T-shirts and stuff every day. It's so boring.
She walked back into my room and emerged a minute later, holding up a gold 70s lamé jumpsuit I used to pair with brown boots.
I mean, look at this. I have total and utter jumpsuit envy right now.
Get them off, I said when I could speak.
What?
Those tights. Get them off. My voice emerged, strangled and unrecognisable. Lily looked down at the black and yellow tights.
No, seriously though, you have some proper vintage gear in there. I mean, Bieber, DVF, that purple Chanel type thing. Do you know what this stuff is worth?
Get them off.
Perhaps registering my sudden rigidity, Sam began to propel me forwards.
Look, why don't we go through to the living room and... I'm not moving until she takes those tights off.
Lily pulled a face.
Jesus, no need to have a baby about it.
I watched, vibrating with anger as Lily began to peel down my bumblebee tights, kicking at them when they wouldn't slide off her feet.
Don't rip them!
It's just a pair of tights.
They are not just a pair of tights. They were a gift.
Still a pair of tights, she muttered. She finally got them off, leaving them in a black and yellow heap on the floor. In the other room, I could hear the clatter of hangers as the rest of my clothes were presumably being hastily replaced. A moment later, Lily appeared in the living room, in her bra and knickers. She waited until she could be sure she had our attention, then pulled a short dress slowly and ostentatiously over her head, wiggling as it went over her slim, pale hips. Then she smiled at me sweetly.
I'm going clubbing. Don't wait up. Nice to see you again, Mr...
Fielding, said Sam.
Mr. Fielding?
She smiled at me, a smile that wasn't a smile at all, and with a slam of the door, she was gone. I let out a shaky breath and then walked over and retrieved the tights. I sat down on the sofa and straightened them out, smoothing them until I could be sure there were no snags or cigarette burns. Sam sat down.